the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. As if you hadn't guessed from the title of the program, this show is all about retirement planning, navigating for it, planning for it, and then once retired, how do you maintain yourself in retirement? Today, we are going to focus on that most reliable source of income, and that is Social Security benefits. And I should mention on tomorrow's program, we will have as a guest Yolanda York from the Social Security Administration, what every woman should know now about Social Security. But all right, let's start with that, Jim. For many people, Social Security is their retirement chief source of income.
Just a plug here before we begin, John, tomorrow's program with Yolanda York, if you're listening to this broadcast, you're married, please do yourself a favor and have your spouse listen to tomorrow's program. If you have a daughter that is married, have her listen to the program. You have friends that are nearing retirement, have them listen to it, because there's so many mistakes that are made or so much information out there that people just aren't aware. And so we're going to focus today on Social Security, but we're also going to focus on it from a woman's perspective tomorrow when I interview Yolanda, and our topic will be what every woman should know about Social Security. And let me just throw some statistics out at you. 9 out of 10 individuals age 65 and older are receiving Social Security benefits. Goes to show you the popularity of it. The 1/10 that probably is not receiving it is either 1, delaying receiving retirement, or they're receiving a government pension. Social Security represents 1/2 of total retirement income for 53% of married couples. For an unmarried woman, Social Security represents 74% of her total income. And for 20% of individuals age 65 and over, Social Security represents 100% of income. It gets even more pronounced when you take individuals that are elderly. These are people in their 80s and 90s. It could represent for 50% of those in that age bracket, it could be 90% of their income. So, John, the decisions that you make on Social Security have a major, major impact. For example, a number of studies done by the Department of Social Security, for example, they broke them up into 3 categories: all beneficiaries, married beneficiaries, and non-married beneficiaries. And when you take the people that are reliant on Social Security for 50% of their income, that is 65% of all beneficiaries. It is 52% of married couples, and once again, that number 74% for non-married individuals. For individuals that Social Security makes up 90% of their income, that's 36% of Social Security beneficiaries, 22% of married, and 47% of non-married individuals. How big is it? For the latest figures that we have in the year 2015, there were 59 million Americans receiving Social Security benefits at almost $900 billion that was paid out in benefits for that year. So you can see that for many boomers that are heading into retirement, Social Security is probably the only source of what we call dependable income that you will have during your retirement years. Because if you worked in the private sector, not too many private sector companies have what we call defined benefit pension plans, where you get this stated level of income that you'll get the rest of your life and that of your spouse. So Social Security is a major component in the decision that you will make on when to receive your Social Security benefits is probably the single most important decision you are going to make when you get ready to retire.
All right. As we start this, why don't we get into some of the basics regarding Social Security? Like all government programs, it can sort of be a minefield due to complexity, but at least the jump-off spot that many people have.
Well, if you're in the private sector and you're contributing to Social Security, in order to qualify for a benefit, you must have paid into Social Security for 10 years, or what they call 40 quarters. And the two things that are very important for you as a future Social Security beneficiary is, one, your earnings history, and number two, the age at which your benefits begin. Now, here's something that you can correct and you may not be aware of. Your Social Security benefits are based on an average of earnings over a 35-year period. And what they do is just, let's say you work 35 years and then you retired and applied for benefits. They would simply take 35 years of your earnings and take the average of those 35 years, and that would get your benefit. The lower your level of income, the greater the percentage Social Security will be towards your benefit. Obviously, those that make a lot more money, Social Security will be less of a benefit. Now, here's something that is very important for women, married women, single women, if you're listening to this program, because a lot of you, you're in the working force, but let's say you took time off to have children or raise your children. The average woman in a 35-year period has taken 13 years out of those 35 years in her earnings history. Now, here's what happens. And let me just make this very simple. Let's say that you had a working career of 35 years, but in those 35 years, you took out 5 years to have children. So there were 5 years that you did not work. What the Department of Social Security does in the year that you don't work, they include a zero in your average for that year. So if you didn't work for 5 years, they would add five zeros to the 35-year average earnings. Obviously, if you didn't work for 5 years, it would bring your average down quite a bit. So you want to make sure that you understand that. Now, here's one thing that you could do. Let's say you worked 35 years. You're a woman. You worked 35 years, but five of those 35 years you took off to have children. What you can do is work 40 years. In other words, you could work an extra 5 years paying into the Social Security system so that you will have a 35-year earnings average instead of just 30. In other words, you can make up for those zeros. Let me just sort of give you an example of how this might work. We'll take a gentleman by the name of Mark. He earns $50,000 for 35 years. So that was his salary. He never got a raise. We're just doing this mathematically to make it easy. Mark's average earnings was 50,000. So he worked, but unfortunately, he only worked 32 years. He was unemployed for 3 years without a job, in which case, in his 35-year earning history, three of those years was adding zeros to his average. So his average earnings over 35 years, subtracting 3 years in which he didn't work, his average was $45,714, or $4,300 less than his actual earnings. So what he could do is, instead of working 35 years, he could work an additional 3 years in this case and make up for those 3 years in which he had zeros because he was unemployed. And this is hitting a lot of boomers, John. A lot of people lost their job during the Great Recession between 2007 and 2009, where they were unemployed for a couple of years. Those unemployed years are adding zeros to your Social Security average. So there are a couple of reasons, and I'll get into maximizing strategies in just a moment, why you might want to work a couple extra years. Number one, you can make up for those years that you were adding zero to your average. And number two, once you reach full retirement age, let's say in this case, the example I just gave Mark, where he had 3 years, he was unemployed and didn't work. At age 66, if he works an additional 3 years, he can make up for those 3 years in which he wasn't working, so he will have a 35-year average. And by delaying Social Security benefits from age 66 to, let's say, age 69, he would also increase his benefits by 8% a year. So there's a number of things that you can do to correct this.
At one time, Jim, you could retire at age 62 and get Social Security benefits. Now, since that time, that one time, they've changed the rules and the benefits.
They've changed a number of things. First of all, let's talk about most of us listening to the program, probably boomers. If you were born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement benefits is age 66. If you were born after 1961, full retirement benefits is age 67. What happens is they add a number of months after 1955, 2 months for each year you were born after, so that you go from age 66 to 67. Now, for millennials, I just want to mention this, is because people are living longer today, the average male and female, age 65, have a life expectancy for a male 84, 86 for a female. I just want to tell you, and you'll hear this when I interview Yolanda York tomorrow, that Social Security in the year 2033 will not have enough money to pay full benefits. They will only be able to pay 79% of benefits. So another way of looking at that is if you get $1,000 a month right now in the year 2033, Social Security would reduce your benefits to $790 a month. So I can just tell you, folks, the politicians in Washington aren't talking about it now, but in the next 4 to 5 years, maybe it'll be in the second Trump administration or whoever the next president is, they are going to modify that age limit of 67 currently. They're going to push it up to probably 69 or age 70. They're going to have to. People are living longer today. When Social Security was put into effect, the life expectancy was 65 to 66 years. Today, it's 84 to 86 years. And 1 out of 4 individuals living to age 90. So I just want to tell you, it's coming. Now, here's something that is very, very important. Over 50% of individuals on Social Security take their benefits at age 62. The first thing you need to know, you take your benefits at age 62, you have locked in a lower benefit for the rest of your retirement years. You're only going to get 75% of your eligible benefits. And let's use the example. Let's say at age 66, your benefit is $1,000 a month. If you elect to take your Social Security at age 62, your benefit will only be $750 a month. You give up 25%. So at age 62, basically the way the formula works, you lose 0.625% for each month prior to age 66. And then for the first 36 months, and then it's 0.625. So there's a little formula that they use. Now, here is another important number that you need to understand. Your full retirement age and benefit is at age 66. If you delay taking your Social Security benefits at age 66 and elect to defer them to age 70, your benefit will go up 8% guaranteed by the government till age 70. So in other words, if you take your benefits at age 70, instead of age 66, you will get 132% of your benefit. So in the example I've been using, instead of $1,000 benefit at age 66, you would get $1,320 at age 70. And this is going to be a very important strategy for a husband and wife, especially with women generally outliving their husbands, and also with women having a lower Social Security benefit. So it's a very important thing when you're making your election, and we'll get to some strategies here in a moment, because one of the things that happens, let's say that you're both on Social Security now, husband has a Social Security benefit, the wife has a Social Security benefit, husband dies, the wife has the election to take the larger of the two benefits, either her benefit or her husband's benefit, which is ever larger. And so we're going to talk about strategies to make that benefit larger, because here's what's going to happen. Between a husband and wife, both of you are getting Social Security checks. One spouse passes away, you lose one spouse's income, and that could have a major impact on your lifestyle and your expenses, losing that income. And you need to think about how your living style or lifestyle would change if one of you lost your Social Security benefits.
So most women tend to outlive their husbands. That's just an actuarial fact. But they changed some of the rules regarding women a couple of years ago. So what kind of strategy can you employ here?
Well, one of the rules that went into effect with the budget bill in 2015 is they got rid of the file and suspend benefits between married couples that elevated the benefits for the surviving spouse. What you used to be able to do is a husband could file for his Social Security benefits at age 66. And let's just say that his benefits would, at age 66, would be $2,000 a month. What he would do is he would file for his benefits and then suspend. By suspending his benefits would grow 8% a year until age 70. But what it allowed his wife to do, his wife could file for her spousal benefits, which would be one half of her husband's benefit. In this case, since her husband's benefit was $2,000, she could file for her spousal benefits, getting $1,000 a month. In the meantime, husband's benefits were growing by 8% a year. So then at age 70, that $2,000 benefit would be close to $2,600. It'd actually be more than that by age 70. They got rid of that. However, it is still a very important strategy. If you can afford, as a couple, for the husband to delay taking Social Security, his Social Security, until age 70, what that does, and especially if he was the main breadwinner, in other words, you have to do an analysis of whose income or Social Security benefit would be larger. So let's say you're in a situation where the husband's benefit is $2,000 a month and the wife's benefit is only $1,500 a month. Well, by delaying the benefit for 4 years, let's say the husband decides to delay receiving his Social Security for 4 years, in 4 years, his benefit would be $2,721 a month at age 70 instead of the $2,000 now. Now, what the wife could do is the wife could apply for her benefits. And let's say her benefits were $1,500 a month. And in this case, at age 70, her husband's benefit would be $2,700 a month, and then the wife's benefit would be $1,500 plus any cost of living. Now, what this does for the surviving spouse is, let's say the husband dies first. So let's say the wife's benefit is $1,500. The husband's benefit is now $2,700. So the wife at that time of her husband's death could elect to receive her husband's benefit of $2,700 versus her own benefit of $1,500. So at least if you do this suspend on part of the husband, one spouse can still get Social Security benefits. In this case, it could be the wife applying for her own benefits, assuming that she worked and had a benefit that she was entitled to and had 40 quarters or 10 years of working history. So it is a strategy that works, and you should really look at, and it's a very important planning consideration when there's either one, a major age difference between a husband and wife, and just the fact alone that women tend to outlive their husbands, and the longevity factor of women is much, much longer. You'll find more women. And when I was interviewing Yolanda, she was telling me that there's over 40,000 Americans in this country that are age 100 and older right now, and most of them are women. So just a heads up. So there are very important strategies here for delaying to age 70 still in place today, despite the fact that you have a situation where they got rid of some of the benefits of the file and suspend. I never understood why they did that, because it was done under the pretense that this was mainly advantage for rich people. Well, guess what? Only about 10-15% of the Social Security population took advantage of the file and suspend strategy. The reason is they were unaware of it. They didn't have advisors to tell them the benefit of file and suspend. So there still is a benefit for the husband to delay receiving Social Security. It would put his wife in a much better situation should he pass or predecease her.
Would you do me a favor? Go down a checklist here, because again, we're doing all of this verbally, and go down a checklist and tell me the key issues to consider.
Number one, employment status. So you have to take a look at, you know, was the husband the main breadwinner? Was his salary much bigger? Was the wife coming into the workforce later as a result of, let's say, having children? The marital status and, let's say, the income disparity between two spouses is very, very important. The availability of other sources of income. In other words, let's say the husband decides to delay Social Security, which would be the best strategy. Do you have other sources of income you can rely on until you start taking those benefits at age 70? The other thing is the need for liquidity. In other words, if you have other assets, do you really want to use them up until age 70? Your risk tolerance, tax implications for receiving Social Security benefits, and the impact of non-covered employment or government pension. So there are a lot of factors that go into making this decision, John, and it is really important that you consider this when it comes to planning Social Security. You want to plan for this. Here's the key point, and one of the main ones. Which partner is likely to live the longest? And it's pretty easy. You can look at health history of your parents. You can look at your own health history. You can take a look at the age difference between a husband and wife. Generally, in a lot of marriages, we see that the husband is older than his wife. So there's that age difference, and plus the fact that women tend to outlive men by 2 to 3 years. And so that is one reason why you want to take a look at maximizing the benefit of delaying your benefits until age 70. And this is something that you also should really put it down on pencil and see, does this work out? Because really what you want to do is you want to leave your surviving spouse in the best position. Because remember, when one of you dies, you're going to lose one source of income. I mean, think of it this way. Just say that you lost, let's say your Social Security benefit is $1,500 a month. You know, that's $18,000 a year. If you take a look at if you were in bonds or if you were in stocks, it would take over $500,000 to make up the difference in the loss of one's that Social Security check. You know, it's just one more example why you have to do a lot of planning here, because once you make this decision, they tend to become permanent.
Okay, let's do some practical applications here. Right. You don't want to take the benefit at age 62 because you know is going to be less, and that's a permanent less, so to speak. But now you've been laid off, and it's only going to be for maybe it's a year, and then you're recalled again, so you start working again. So you got laid off, and maybe you decided to start taking Social Security, but then you're called back. Okay, so what do you do in this type of a circumstance?
The best thing to do is suspend your Social Security payments and allow it to start growing again. But if you continue to receive it, here's the problem. If you go back to work under age 66, you're going to lose $1 of Social Security benefits for every $2 you earn over the figure of $15,720. So, you know, you got to be real careful there. So the best thing you could probably do is suspend your benefits if you do go back to work, because you don't want to get Social Security benefits at a lower level. And at the same time, you're ending up losing those benefits because you earn over that $15,720.
Well, let's take a look at another aspect, too. Remember, at one time, you didn't pay taxes on Social Security because theoretically you'd paid into it. You're just drawing back out what you paid. But they changed that, and they put some new rules in back in the 80s, and then they changed those rules again in the 90s. And in reality, what they're doing is recapturing some of the Social Security. Let's face it, that's what's going on.
Yeah, there's two rules here based on your income. If your income plus one half of your Social Security benefits exceeds a certain level of income, you could have up to 50% of your Social Security subject to income tax, or up to 85% of your Social Security subject to income tax. Now, here's basic rules that we'll cover. If you are single and you make over $25,000, which includes one half of your Social Security, then 50% of your Social Security is subject to income tax. If you're a single and you make over $34,000, including one half of your Social Security, 85% of your Social Security is taxable. If you are married, 50% of your Social Security is subject to taxes. If you make over $32,000, 85% of your Social Security tax is subject to taxation if you make over $44,000. And sometimes this can really wallop you. Now, there are a number of ways that you can avoid that. If you're in that lower income level, you can stagger your withdrawals from tax-deferred accounts like IRAs or annuity, or timing the sale of stock. Or, for example, if you have tax-free withdrawals from Roth IRAs, is another one. So there are a number of things that you can do. But John, I would say for most people, it's just a fact. When you take a look at the level of income, they have not indexed that figure of $25,000 or basically $34,000 for single individuals, and the same thing for married couples where the figure is $32,000 and $44,000. They have not indexed that for inflation for as long as they've been doing it. So let's put it this way. They're trying to capture and tax that Social Security, which is the purpose. But bear in mind, when you see Social Security is no longer free as it once was, you could be subject to taxes.
Having said all of this, what are the main things we want to do if I'm planning for Social Security? So you get a handle on this and you have that little checklist. You can go down and go, okay, I need to do this, make that decision, go from here to there, that type of thing.
Number one is if you can work a little bit longer or delay taking Social Security, you really don't want to take it at age 62 because you're only going to get 75% of your benefit. So if you could work beyond age 62 and delay the benefit to full retirement age, which is either 66 or 67, you want to do that. You do not want to take your benefits and then go back to work because you could forfeit part of your benefits for exceeding a certain level of income. Number two, as much as possible, if you can afford it for a husband and wife, delay the Social Security benefits of the largest income producer in the family. It's usually the husband, but I've seen cases where the woman was the main breadwinner in terms of salary. You want to delay that benefit to age 70 if you can afford to do it, because number one, it's going to go up 8% a year from age 66 to age 70. It'll go up 8% a year. So at age 70, you're going to get 132%. And what that's going to do is not only will you get more income at age 70, but it also is going to give your spouse a much larger survivor benefit. Because remember, one of those Social Security checks will go away on the death of the first spouse. And so this allows the surviving spouse to have a much larger level of income. Unfortunately, the file and suspend strategies don't longer work the way they used to. That ended May 1st, 2016. And so there is no reason for a spouse to delay receiving her own benefit, assuming she worked and qualified for Social Security, paying 10 years into the system. So once she reaches age 66, there's no longer a reason for her to delay receiving her own benefits. A couple final things I want to cover here is, and we'll cover a lot more with this tomorrow with Yolanda York. If you are divorced and you were married to your husband for 10 years, your ex-husband for 10 years, you can receive Social Security benefits at age 62, full benefits at age 66. And you can do this, by the way, and file for it without your ex even knowing it. If you've been married several times, you had three husbands, you could decide, take an example, you were married 10 years to each husband, you could decide to take which husband's salary you want to receive half of the spousal benefits. And if your husband is deceased and you are now single, you can start receiving Social Security benefits at age 60. Of course, they're less And so there are a number of things that you can do here. But I mean, the one thing that you really want to do is think through your Social Security benefit planning and put some effort in. There's so many things you want to think, and it's probably the single most important decision that you will make in terms of planning your retirement income. As I mentioned, one half of married couples age 65 and older, Social Security provides 53% of their income. For unmarried women age 65 and older, it is 74% of their income. So however you have these benefits, and really get together, if you do not understand all the implications for both you and your spouse, or if you are single, let's say you're divorced or you're just a single person, really understand and get together with an advisor, because, you know, once you make a bad decision, it could be permanent for the remaining years of your retirement. You don't want to find yourself in that kind of situation.
And more on this subject tomorrow, coming up with Yolanda York from the Social Security Administration as our guest. But now it's time for our real life case study, which is based on somebody's real life. And of course, the names are changed to protect those who are involved. So what kind of a situation do we have here, Jim?
This is the case of Ben and Barbara McDowell. Both are age 63. They hope to retire in a couple of years, in 2 to 3 years, when they'll be eligible for full retirement benefits at Social Security. Based on their health questionnaire that we did, Ben's life expectancy is age 90. Barbara's age 93. And once again, folks, this is something that we are seeing more and more, and it's one of the big mistakes that is made in retirement planning, is failing to plan for medical expenses, long-term care expenses later on in life, because the fact of the matter is people are living longer. Every single decade, life expectancy has gone up by 2 years, where today most men will live between age 84 and 85. Most women will live to be between age 86, 87, and 1 out of 4 of you will live to be age 90 and beyond. In terms of risk tolerance for both of them, basically moderate risk. There was a little bit of risk taking, especially on Ben's part. Now, a little bit more on their background. Ben is a regional sales manager. He's been with the same company for about 20 years. He travels between 1 and 2 weeks a month for business. The pay is excellent, but he feels he wants to begin a new chapter in his life. The travel's getting a little bit old. Ben likes the idea of slowing down and doing something different, given that many of his friends are already heading into retirement. Some of them are retired. He is healthy, but he has concerns since he watched both of his parents suffer through Alzheimer's in their later years. He has always invested heavily in precious metals, since that is how his father taught him to invest. And especially, you know, in the last decade, that was really one of the best investment strategies. In the 00 decade, it was mainly commodities and emerging markets. However, he's concerned about how much he has invested now that he's considering retirement, and especially the losses that he has suffered through over the last 3 or 4 years. Barbara, on the other hand, her job was a homemaker. She's anxious and excited about the prospect of her husband retiring. She currently enjoys babysitting her grandkids a couple days a week, but looks forward to getting more time with her husband. She's concerned about the cost of retirement, given her husband's family health history and her own expected longevity. She hopes both of them can maintain their current lifestyle as long as possible, but she values their independence. Barbara is a little bit more conservative than her husband, Ben, and especially about experiencing another loss in their portfolio. They had well over a 40% loss in their portfolio during this downturn that we've seen in gold prices, dropping from 1900 today. They're roughly in the 12.25 range. What was important to Ben and Barbara? Number one, not outliving their assets. That was very important to both of them, especially with Ben's parents both having gone through Alzheimer's. reducing the risk in their portfolio, especially after the dramatic drop in precious metals, having a more reliable source of income, and then, of course, managing medical costs, as you can imagine. If you have a family history of living long, number one, and number two, seeing parents go through Alzheimer's or dementia, you can understand their feelings about that. Their essential budget was $95,000. Discretionary budget, mainly travel, golf, and entertainment, was $31,000. Total income of $126,000. Ben's salary was $165,000, so there was a surplus of roughly about $39,000. In retirement, they estimated their budget would drop, essentials would drop from $95,000 to $78,000. Discretionary would drop from about $31,000 to $22,000. So basically about almost a little over $2,000 a month drop in monthly expenses. Their combined Social Security would be $42,000. Ben's pension would be $29,000 a month. Their shortfall would be roughly about the same, $29,000. Now, as we look at their assets, their primary residence was $330,000. They had a rental property worth about $175,000. Ben's retirement assets, mainly his company and matching 401k, was $850,000. Barbara's retirement, mainly IRAs that they contributed to over the years, $90,000. Joint assets were about $244,000, and they had some business interests that were worth $96,000, mainly limited partnerships. Total investment assets were roughly about $1.3 million. Total assets, $1.8 million. Net worth, $1.8 million. One of the things that was very important to Barbara was reducing the risk, especially after she saw what happened to their precious metals portfolio. They also wanted to have what was very important as a predictable source of income. They didn't want to outlive their assets. They were really concerned about what would happen down the road with longevity. As we mentioned, age expectancy for Barbara was 93, 90 for Ben. They didn't want to outlive those assets and manage medical costs. So what we did is we put them in a balanced portfolio for both their retirement accounts and their joint account. And that produced roughly about $34,000 of income. Their total income was about $108,000. That was a surplus of $8,000 over their budget. And one of the things that we had to tell them, and this was very important for Barbara, because part of the portfolio was invested in dividend paying stocks. She was nervous about the stock market. Basically, she was a more conservative investor than her husband, Ben. She was worried about not only the losses they incurred in the gold portfolio, but also the losses in their retirement accounts in the bear market between 2007 and 2009. But I said, look, your surplus is only about $8,000. Your life expectancy when you retire is going to be about 35 years or more. You have to have an inflation hedge, especially after you saw what happened to Ben's parents, both having to go through Alzheimer's and be put into assisted care. And so that was one of the ways we overcame this objection in terms of some of the risk, because basically Barbara wanted less risk. But it was a balanced portfolio between fixed income and dividend paying stocks. We reduced the precious metals portfolio considerably because, number one, it didn't produce income and it was too volatile and not very dependable as a source of income for retirement.
So coming up tomorrow, we have Yolanda York on the program. She's with the Social Security Administration. And for you ladies who are out there, it's really important for you to listen to this one, because we're focusing on the preparation of retirement for women, knowing that for the most part, women outlive their husbands. What are your options and how do you factor this into your plan? That's coming up tomorrow here on Lifetime Income. Anything else in the future we're looking at, Jim?
We're going to be covering some health issues. I'm going to tackle the grantor trust. We're going to be talking about that coming up for those of you. We have Larry Lots of Bucks out in the audience. We're going to talk about some ways to minimize estate taxes. And we're also going to talk about some health-related issues, especially the damages that sugar could be doing to your body and disease. I was blown away when I read this book on sugar. You know, John, I don't know about you, but I grew up drinking Cokes. I don't drink Coke now. I mean, my main beverage I drink is mainly water. I drink almost 2 liters of water a day. But I never understood how bad sugar is for our bodies. And as Americans, we consume a lot of sugar. It's in almost all the foods that we eat. Sugar is in wine. It's also in carbohydrate diets that are converted to sugar in our body. So we'll be talking about that in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Lifetime Income Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.